Day 71.
Instructions. You will hear a number of different recordings, and you'll have to answer questions on what you hear. There will be time for you to read the instructions and questions, and you will have a chance to check your work. All the recordings will be played once only. The test is in four sections. Write all your answers in the listening question booklet. At the end of the test, you will be given 10 minutes to transfer your answers to an answer sheet. Now turn to section 1.
Section 1. You will hear a talk about telephone messages. Look at questions 1 to 14. Now listen to the talk and answer the questions 1 to 14.
Tina Hayward is a secretary at Standard Security System. Her boss, David Shaw, was away on business on Monday. She took several messages for him.
9 o'clock.
Mr. Shaw's office. Oh, it's Alice. Can you give Mr. Shaw a message? I want Thursday off. You see, my grandmother died yesterday. I'll have to go to the funeral. Oh, I'm sorry. How old was she? 92.
9:40.
Mr. Shaw's office. Can I help you?
May I speak to Mr. Shaw, please?
I'm afraid he's away on business. He'll be back tomorrow. Can I take a message?
Please. It's Tom Dobson here. Look, I can't make the meeting on Tuesday afternoon. Something important has come up. I'll ring David on Wednesday. 10:30.
Hello, Peter. What can I do for you?
Mr. Shaw isn't here, is he?
No, not till tomorrow.
Ah, it's just that I won't be in till Thursday. I've got the flu. The doctor wanted me to have 3 days leave.
Okay, Peter. I'll pass the message on. I hope you'll feel better soon.
11:45.
Mr. Shaw's office?
Can you put me through to Mr. Shaw?
I'm afraid he isn't here today. Would you like to leave a message?
Oh, right. Wadley's garage here. It's about his new car. It isn't ready yet. There's a strike at the factory today. 2:10.
Good afternoon. Mr. Shaw's office? My name's Samantha Ellis. Can you get Mr. Shaw to phone me as soon as he gets back from Lyon? It really is very urgent.
3:40.
Good afternoon. Mr. Shaw's office?
Hello, this is Miguel Gonzalez speaking. Is David there?
No, I'm afraid not. He's away on business today. Can I pass on a message, Senor Gonzalez?
Yes, I may be in London from the 21st to the 25th. I want to see David then, if possible. It's about the agency in Mexico. 4:25.
Mr. Shaw's office? This is Julia White from Western Video System. Mr. Shaw's at the trade fair in Lyon, isn't he? Yes, that's right. He should be here tomorrow. Well, can you give him this message first thing in the morning? I'm afraid we must cancel our last order. The customers have changed their minds again.
5.
Mr. Shaw's office?
Ah, Miss Hayward, this is Charles Berry.
Oh, good afternoon, sir.
I've got an important message for Mr. Shaw. Give it to him the minute he comes in. Just say, don't supply Mason and Company until further notice. I'll explain later.
It's Tuesday morning. David Shaw has just returned to his office after his business trip to Lyon.
Good morning, Tina. Could you come in for a minute, please?
Good morning, Mr. Shaw. Did you have a good trip?
Yes, thank you. Were there any messages for me yesterday?
Yes, quite a few. Shall I just run through them?
Please.
Alice phoned. She said she wanted Thursday off.
Oh, why's that?
Her grandmother died. She wants to go to the funeral.
Oh dear, I'd better see her later.
Then Mr. Dobson called. He said he couldn't make the meeting this afternoon, but would ring you on Wednesday.
Okay.
Peter came in looking for you. He said he shouldn't be in until Tuesday.
Did he?
Yes, he told me he got the flu. The doctor wanted him to have 3 days rest.
Right, go on.
And Woodley's garage called. They said your new car wasn't ready.
Oh no, why on earth not?
They said there was a strike at the factory yesterday.
Again?
After lunch, a lady phoned, Samantha Ellis. She asked you to phone as soon as possible. She said it was urgent.
Ah, Samantha. I wonder what she wants.
Oh, Miss White phoned. She said that Western Video Systems had to cancel their last order because their customer had changed their minds.
Pity.
Then Mr. Gonzalez called from Mexico to say he might be in London from the 21st to the 25th. He wanted to see you then.
Oh, good. I hope he can make it.
Oh, and just five. Mr. Berry phoned. He told us not to supply Mason & Co. until further notice. He said it was important and that he would explain later.
Anything else?
No, that's it. Coffee?
Please. That would be nice.
This is the end of section one. You will have half a minute to check your answers. Now turn to section two.
Section two. You are going to listen to a talk about how to prepare for an interview, looking at questions 15 to 22. Now, listen to the talk and answer the questions 15 to 22.
You may be the best candidate for a job, but that is no guarantee that you'll be offered it. Experience and qualifications are important, but you may also have to sell yourself as the best person for the post. This requires you to know as much about the position as possible. Here are some procedures to go through. Begin by thinking how you can make your best impression on the interviews. You should not present yourself as being different from what you are, but you can present yourself in a very positive way. Consider what the interviewer's likely prejudices and dislikes might be, and take these into account when answering questions and unveiling your personality. And reflect on the personal qualities that might be necessary for the work you will be doing. These qualities will surely be expected and perhaps even tested in the interview. If the company wants an aggressive go-getter, for instance, you had better not project a timid and overcautious self-image in the interview room. Research the company. The more you know about your potential employers, the better. Investigate their products, try them if appropriate, and keep a lookout for their advertisements. Visit a library, read trade magazines, newspapers, company brochures, and reports that will bring you up to date with the latest developments in the company. Find out what the company's priorities are. Suppose they place great emphasis on turnover and quick profit. You will then need to stress the revenue you generated in your last job, rather than the research project you supervised for 5 years. But if your prospective employers are deeply committed to a program of research and development, you should play up your academic or supervisory skills. Know about your own strengths. Sit down with a pen and paper and match your skills and experience to the job description in the advertisement. Think how the employer would benefit by choosing you rather than another candidate. Apart from the practical skills required, consider the less tangible qualities the employer might be searching for. Do you have potential in certain areas which could be realized if given the chance? How do you rate yourselves in terms of creative thinking, leadership qualities, the ability to work under pressure? Jot down incidents in which you have displayed these characteristics. Know about your weaknesses. Good interviewers are practiced in finding the weaknesses in a candidate, so don't imagine that you are certain to get away with anything. But what you cannot hide, you can always explain, provided you are well prepared. And if you think positively about yourself, you can make those explanations to your advantage.
That is the end of section two. You will have half a minute to check your answers. Now turn to section three. Section three.
A journalist will interview Mr. Miller about do-it-yourself. You will hear the conversation. Look at the questions number 23 to 31. Listen to the talk and answer questions 23 to 31.
Do-It-Yourself magazine organizes a competition every summer to find the handyman of the year. The winner this year is Mr. Roy Miller, a Sheffield postman. A journalist and a photographer have come to his house. The journalist is interviewing Mr. Miller for an article in the magazine.
Well, I'm very impressed by all the work you've done in your house, Mr. Miller. How long have you been working on it?
I first became interested in do-it-yourself several years ago. You see, my son Paul is disabled. He's in a wheelchair and I just had to make alterations to the house. I couldn't afford to pay workmen to do it. I had to learn to do it myself.
Have you had any experience of this kind of work? Did you have any practical skills?
No. I got a few books from the library, but they didn't help very much. Then I decided to go to evening classes so that I could learn basic carpentry and electrics.
What sort of changes did you make to the house?
First of all, practical things to help Paul. You never really realize the problems handicapped people have until it affects your own family. Most government buildings, for example, have steps up to the door. They don't plan buildings so that disabled people can get in and out. We used to live in a flat, and of course it was totally unsuitable. Just imagine the problem a disabled person would have in your house. We needed a large house with wide corridors so Paul could get from one room to another. We didn't have much money and we had to buy this one. It's over 90 years old and it was in a very bad state of repair.
Where did you begin?
The electrics. I completely rewired the house so that Paul could reach all the switches. I had to lower the light switches and raise the power points. I went on to do the whole house so that Paul could reach things and go where he wanted.
What else did you do?
I was very worried about fire. You see, Paul can't move very quickly. I fitted them so that we would have plenty of warning if there were a fire. I put in a complete burglar alarm system. It took weeks. The front door opens automatically, and I'm going to put a device on Paul's wheelchair so that he'll be able to open and close it when he wants.
What are you working on now?
I've just finished the kitchen. I've designed it so that he can reach everything. Now I'm building an extension so that Paul will have a large room on the ground floor where he can work.
There's a £10,000 prize. How are you going to spend it?
I'm hoping to start my own business so that I can convert ordinary houses for disabled people. I think I've become an expert on the subject.
That is the end of section 3. You will have half a minute to check your answers. Now turn to section 4.
Section 4. Now you will hear the recording for section 4. William Shakespeare is well known in the world because of his plays. As you listen to the talk, answer questions 32 to 41. First, you will have some time to look at questions 32 to 41. Now, listen to the talk and answer the questions 32 to 41.
Ask anyone involved with English literature who is the greatest writer, and you will undoubtedly hear one name mentioned, William Shakespeare. Although Shakespeare died over 360 years ago, his 37 plays are still valued and loved today. Why? Part of the answer lies in the fact that Shakespeare dealt with timeless problems that continue to concern us, such as prejudice and parent-child conflicts. This essay will discuss these problems using several of Shakespeare's plays as examples. Two of Shakespeare's best-known plays tackle the ugly and still unsolved problem of prejudice. The hero of Othello is a black soldier who marries a high-society white woman, Desdemona. Othello is clearly the best male character in the play. He's brave, successful and talented, yet most of the white people are horrified by his marriage because of unjustified prejudice. Desdemona's father also objects to their marriage. While straining against such prejudice, their marriage is preyed upon by Iago, one of Othello's officers, who excites Othello to become jealous of his wife. As a result, Othello and his wife tragically die. Shakespeare also worked with another form of prejudice, anti-Semitism, in The Merchant of Venice. The character Shylock is Jewish, and all the Christians curse him, hate him, and even spit on him. Even though Shylock is the villain, Shakespeare gives him many speeches to make it clear that Jews are also human beings. Many of Shakespeare's plays are concerned with another still unsolved problem, the generation gap. For example, King Henry IV, in the play in the same name, is a very cool, cynical, and snobbish politician. His son Prince Hal is just the opposite. Hal is warm and outgoing and is friendly with all kinds of people. He is also a swinger who goes to taverns and who plays around with women. Naturally, the father cannot understand the kind of life his son leads, and part of the action of the play Henry IV revolves around this parent-child difference. The play Cymbeline begins with another sort of parent-child problem. Here, the father, Cymbeline, wants his daughter, Imogen, to marry a man he likes. However, Imogen falls in love with someone else and secretly marries him. Cymbeline is furious. He orders the husband to go away, and he locks up his broken-hearted daughter. The rest of the play deals with the solution to this problem. Shakespeare's plays are deservedly popular. They contain many colourful characters, beautiful poetry, and action-filled plots. Shakespeare's uncanny ability to focus on problems that are still current today also adds to the continuing success of his plays.
This is the end of section 4. You will have half a minute to check your answers. This is the end of the listening test. Day 72. Instructions. You will hear a number of different recordings, and you will have to answer questions on what you hear. There will be time for you to read the instructions and questions, and you'll have a chance to check your work. All the recordings will be played once only. The test is in 4 sections. Write all your answers in the listening question booklet. At the end of the test, you will be given 10 minutes to transfer your answers to an answer sheet. Now turn to section 1.
Section 1. You're going to listen to a talk about how to improve study habits. Look at questions 1 to 11. Now listen to the talk and answer the questions 1 to 11.
Maybe you are an average student with an average intellect. You pass most of your subjects. You occasionally get good grades, but they are usually just average. You are more interested in hiking than in history, and in sports than in scholarship. The fact is that you don't study very much. You probably think you will never be a top student. This is not necessarily so, however. Anyone can become a better scholar if he or she wants to. It is true that you may not be enthusiastic about everything that you study, but by using your time properly, you may improve your grades without additional work. Here's how. 1. Plan your time carefully. When you plan a trip, one of the first things you must do is make a list of things to take. If you don't, you are almost certain to leave something important at home. When you plan your week, you should make a list of things that you have to do. Otherwise, you may forget to leave enough time to complete an important task. After making the list, you should make a schedule of your time. First fill in committed time, eating, sleeping, dressing, school, meeting, etc. Then decide on a good regular time for studying. Be sure to set enough time to complete the work that you are normally assigned each week. Of course, studying shouldn't occupy all of your free time. Don't forget to set aside enough time for entertainment, hobbies, and maybe just relaxation. A weekly schedule may not solve all your problems, but it will force you to realize what is happening to your time. 2. Find a good place to study. Look around the house for a good study area. Keep this space, which may be a desk or simply a corner of your room, free of everything but study materials. No games, radios, or television. If you can't find such a place at home, find a library where you can study. When you sit down to work, concentrate on the subject, and don't go to the place you have chosen unless you are ready to study. 3. Scan before you read. This means looking a passage over quickly but thoroughly before you begin to read it more carefully. Scanning a passage lets you preview the material and get a general idea of the content. This will actually allow you to skip less important material when you begin to read. Scanning will help you double your reading speed and improve your comprehension. 4. Make good use of your time in class. Take advantage of class time to listen to everything the teacher says. Sit where you can see and hear well. Really listening in class means less work later. Taking notes will help you remember what the teacher says. When the teacher gets off the subjects, stop taking notes. 5. Study regularly. When you get home from class, go over your notes. Review the important points that your teacher mentioned in class. Read any related material in your textbook. If you know what your teacher is going to discuss the next day, scan and read that material too. This will help you understand the next class. If you do these things regularly, the material will become more meaningful, and you will remember it longer. 6. Develop a good attitude about tests. The purpose of a test is to show what you have learned about a subject. The world won't end if you don't pass a test, so don't get overly worried. Tests do more than just provide grades. They let you know what you need to study more, and they help you make your new knowledge permanent. There are other techniques that might help you with your studying. Only a handful have been mentioned here. You will probably discover many others after you have tried these.
That is the end of section 1. You will have half a minute to check your answers. Now turn to section 2.
Section 2. Nicola is going to interview Michelle and Luke. They talk about a new way of life. You will hear the discussion between Nicola and Michelle. Look at questions 12 to 17. Now listen to the conversation and answer questions 12 to 17. On TV magazine tonight, we're looking at people who have given up regular and high salaries to start a new way of life. First of all, we have two interviews with people who decided to leave the rat race. Nicola Burgess spoke to them.
This is the Isle of Skye. Behind me, you can see the Croft buildings belonging to Daniel and Michelle Burns, who gave up their jobs to come to this remote area of Scotland. Daniel was the sales manager of Hi-Vita, the breakfast cereal company. And Michelle was a successful advertising executive. Michelle, can you tell us what made you give up everything to come here?
Everything? That's a matter of opinion. A big house and two cars isn't everything. Dan and I both used to work long hours. We had to leave so early in the morning, and we came home so late at night that we hardly ever saw each other. We should have come here years ago, but we were earning such big salaries that we were afraid to leave our jobs. In the end, we had so little time together that our marriage was breaking up. So 2 years ago, we took a week's holiday in the Scottish Highlands. We saw this place, and we both fell in love with it. It was for sale, and we liked it so much that we decided to give up our jobs, and here we are. How do you earn a living, if you don't mind me asking? We don't need very much. We keep sheep and goats and grow our own vegetables. We've got a few chickens. It's a very simple life, and we're not in it for profit. We're still so busy that we work from 5 in the morning until 8 at night, but we're together. We're happier than we've ever been, and we're leading a natural life. There must be some things you miss, surely. I don't know. We knew a lot of people in London, but they weren't real friends. We see our neighbours occasionally, and there's such a lot to do on the farm that we don't have time to feel lonely. At least we see each other now.
Nicola then interviews Luke. Now listen to the conversation and answer questions 18 to 22.
The motorbike I'm sitting on is a very special one. Special because it's been all around the world. It belongs to Luke Sanders, who just returned to England after a 3-year motorcycle journey. Luke, what led you to leave your job and make this trip?
I worked in a car factory on the assembly line. All I had to do was put 4 nuts on the bolts that hold the wheels on. It's done by robots now, and a good thing too. The job was so routine that I didn't have to think at all. I bought this Triumph 750cc bike second-hand, fitted 2 panniers on the back, and just set off for Australia.
What did you do for money?
I had a bit of money to start with, but of course it didn't last long, and I had to find work where I could. I've done so many different things. Picked fruit, washed up, worked as a mechanic.
How do people react to you? In India, for example?
Everywhere I went, the people were so friendly that problems seemed to solve themselves. There was such a lot of interest in the bike that it was easy to start a conversation. You know, often you can communicate without really knowing the language.
Did you ever feel like giving up,
turning round and coming home?
Only once, in Bangladesh. I became so ill with food poisoning that I had to go to hospital, but it didn't last long.
You've had such an exciting time that you're finding it difficult to settle down, won't you?
I'm not going to. Next week I'm off again, but this time I'm going in the opposite direction. See you in about 3 years' time.
That is the end of section two. You will have half a minute to check your answers. Now turn to section three.
Section three. You are going to listen to a passage about the average age of first marriage in the US and answer questions 23 to 33. First, you'll have time to look at questions 23 to 33. Now listen to the talk and answer the questions 23 to 33. This is a bar graph of the average age at first marriage of both men and women in the US. The black bar stands for women and the white bar stands for men. It can be seen from the graph that women generally get married at an earlier age than men in the 87 years shown in the graph. From 1900 to 1987, the lowest age at first marriage for women occurred between 1950 and 1960, when the approximate marriage age for women was slightly over 20 years old. At the same time, men's age at first marriage also dropped to the lowest point, younger than 23 years old. Secondly, the graph also shows that there were two stages of changes in the average age at first marriage for both men and women, from 1900 to 1940 and from 1950 to 1987. During the first 40 years, there was a slow but steady decreasing tendency of first marriage age for men, which dropped from almost 26 in 1900 to slightly younger than 25 in 1930 and 1940. At the same time, women's age at first marriage also became younger from 1900 to 1920 and slightly grew older from 1920 to 1940. But on the whole, the average age for women stayed between 21.5 and less than 22 years old. From 1950 to 1987, there appeared an increasingly delaying trend in first age for both men and women. Men's age at first marriage reached almost 26 in 1987, the same age as that in 1900, while women's age at first marriage reached 22 in 1980 and nearly 24 in 1987, the biggest age for women in the 87 years in the 20th century. These different trends of marriage age in the 87 years reflect the social circumstances and development in the US. During the first 40 years, America maintained a steady economic growth. Thus, people kept their traditional values of life and marriage, men securing a successful career and happy family, women growing up and marrying Mr. Right and taking care of their family as an ideal. During the post-war period in the 1950s and 1960s, people probably longed for the warmth of family and comforts of a peaceful life, so they got married earlier. But the women's liberation movement in the 1960s and 1970s put a lot of women into deep thinking about their life and values. They began to devote their time and energy to developing themselves and having a successful career instead of getting married soon after they reached the age of marriage. This bar graph, to conclude, is a reflection of the first marriage age trends and also of the process of social development in the US.
That is the end of section three. You will have half a minute to check your answers. Now turn to section four.
Section four. Now you will listen to a conversation between Joan and Mrs. S. about shopping. Listen carefully and answer the questions 34 to 41. First, you'll have time to look at questions 34 to 41. Now listen to the conversation and answer questions 34 to 41.
Yes, madam. Can I help you?
Oh, yes, please. But you're just closing, aren't you?
Well, yes, we are, madam. The shop shuts in 5 minutes.
I shan't keep you long. It was about some saucepans you had in the window last week.
Last week, madam?
I really can't remember which ones you mean.
What were they like?
Oh, they were lovely. Sort of imitation wood. Dark brown colour, country style, you know. And the lids, if I remember rightly, had a sort of leaf pattern, or was it flowers?
That's strange. I don't recognise any of the ones we had from that description.
Are you sure they were in this shop?
Oh, you must know the ones I mean. They were in a sale.
A real bargain, reduced to a quarter of the original price. I couldn't believe my eyes when I saw them.
I'm afraid the sale's over now, madam. And I know we sold out of all the saucepans.
I don't think you did, you know. Elise, my neighbour, Mrs. Cliff, told me that she saw some here only yesterday.
Well, it's all new stock in the window now.
May I just have a look to see if there's anything else?
Well, madam, as you know, we're just closing.
Yes, yes, I'm sorry, I won't keep you. You must get on your nerves when customers come right in on closing time. But they were such beautiful saucepans. I'd have bought them if only I'd had made up my mind on the spot.
Perhaps, madam, if you can come back tomorrow, I could show you all we have in our range of kitchenware. And there are still one or two things at sale price.
Oh, look, that one there. That's the sort of thing I was looking for. But it's not quite the right colour.
That might be the artificial lighting, madam. Of course, if you came back in daylight, you might find exactly what you're looking for.
There it is. That's the pattern. The set behind you.
Thank goodness they haven't been sold.
And thank you so much for being so patient with me. Yes, those are the ones.
This is the end of section 4. You will have half a minute to check your answers. This is the end of the listening test.
Day 73. Instructions. You will hear a number of different recordings and you'll have to answer questions on what you have. There'll be time for you to read the instructions and questions and you will have a chance to check your work. All the recordings will be played once only. The test is in 4 sections. Write all your answers in the listening question booklet. At the end of the test, you will be given 10 minutes to transfer your answers to an answer sheet. Now turn to section 1. Section 1. You will now talk about the British educational system. First, you will have some time to look at questions 1 to 12. Listen to the talk and answer the questions 1 to 12.
All over the world, mention of English education suggests a picture of the public schools, and it suggests in particular the names of certain very famous institutions, Eton, Oxford and Cambridge.